The next speaker is Ilra Vinha, if I've got that right, from Brazil, who is currently a PhD student at the University of Southampton. And she's going to be talking again about an experience of growing up with a sibling with learning difficulties. And as the title of her talk is The Exceptional Experience of Difference.
Right, thank you.
Okay.
Mabel, thank you very much for giving so much strength to Louise, because it was good for me, because it's my first time as well, and I felt very moved by your helping her, and was really good for me. I would like to...
Because the audience would like to hear her.
Yes, and I loved to hear her. I would like to start just thanking Sheena for accepting my story to be here, to be part of this story that we are telling today together, and Melanie to support me on that as well, and all the people that have been speaking so far, because I've learned so much that I cannot start without saying that, acknowledging this, that I've learned so much today, and this is so empowering, being here today and listening to every single one that is here, or just being together with you here today. So being part of this has been very significant for me, being my first presentation outside my university, and being such a nice way, and nice is not enough.
It
would be the lowest. Yeah, hope not. I wanted to show you where I'm from, because I'm so different, I think, because I'm from Brazil, and it's such a long way, and the long way is more in the cultural terms rather than in terms of the distance, which is long as well. So I just wanted to say where I'm from and where my story is situated. And it's just to show you how far Brazil is from England. And that distance in terms of the differences in customs, and especially in related to learning disabilities, learning difficulties, is even more distant. So the story that I will tell maybe will sound even more different. The reason that I am telling the story is just because this is how I became a PhD student, I think, in the first place, was my questions in life since childhood about learning difficulties and the meaning of being different in a society that doesn't like difference, usually. So I've been questioning this my whole life as a sibling, and I'm still questioning now in different ways. So this is why this story is important for me, to situate who I am today as a person and as a student as well. So... Just to explain a little bit about my research, I am starting to investigate in perceptions of children and young people. Their perception of themselves is a bit about identity, which is not such new, but I'm looking in at ways that they represent themselves, both in language, in verbal language, and also in visually, using images. And looking after also their use of metaphors or mental images, as in some ways. So this is, a continuous search that I'm doing in my life. That started with this story, which is, I'm calling The Exceptional Experience of Difference, a learning journey through difficulties and insights. And the exceptional here, I'm picking up a word that was probably the first word that helped me to understand or to accept better the position that my brother has in the world. Because we didn't know what was wrong with him when he was born. And it was only when, at some point, he was started being labeled as exceptional. That helped me to explain people who he was, So this is why I am picking this word, especially to say that the journey was exceptional. And here's the beginning of the story. I was the youngest child so far in a family with lots of grown-up children. I had brothers with 19 years old, others that were 18 years old. So they were all growing up, and some working, marrying, and all that. And when I was 2 years old, came my brother. And the start of his life was a crying that wouldn't stop. And my mother said she knew that something was wrong with him, because she had so far 9 children, and she knew that something was totally different with him from the very first day. And then he was growing and developing very slowly. But we lived in a very small city in Brazil, in the northeast of Brazil, where no health service was really able to say anything about the child. They just didn't know what was wrong with him. And my mommy struggled a lot to understand why he couldn't sit when he was old enough to sit, why he couldn't walk when it was time to walk. And because that Brazil is very immersed in very religious things and black magic and lots of things like that, people try to find explanation in these things for what happens to them sometimes, especially in those days in the 70s. So they used to say that my brother had a curse, or someone had put a spell when my mom was pregnant or something like that. So lots of people came to my house, or sometimes my mom would bring my brother to places for people to pray over his legs to make him to walk. And when he was nearly 4, this second picture that you're seeing there was the last attempt that my mom did. By this time, she said that she couldn't get any more, all these miracles, medicines that people were offering her. And people would just come to our house sometimes and say, look, I have this herb, or I have this cream, I have this thing that if you put in his knees, he will walk. And, of course, it never happened. And finally, when this thing came, that was a kind of powder, that was a wood, that was, I don't know, ashes of something, was the turning point for my mom, because she said, well, I will put this on, and if it doesn't work, it will be, that's it. If someone comes and offers me anything, I will say, I don't want it, I don't need it, and he will not walk, and that's it. And that was a good decision that she took, and it's interesting because I remember that moment very vividly, because it was when I decided to do something. And I was very young, and I was just 5. And I decided that, okay, so it's not with those medicines, maybe I can help. And then this was how he started wanting to walk, was playing with me. And this third picture is when I was playing this game, helping my mom with this ball game, that I had the idea of throwing the ball and moving, every time moving a bit further from him, to challenge him to come and pick up the ball. And I played that with him loads and loads and loads of times. And one day he just woke up, stood up and walked, started walking, and fell off, give one step, another step. But my mom said, look, he can walk. So that was the beginning of my duty as a sister, saying, I can do something, and he is something that he was so connected to myself. We had such a closeness that I knew sometimes what he needed or he wanted to say, and he couldn't speak as well. Of course, he didn't have speech on those days. Later, he developed a bit of language, but on those days, he didn't have any. When he was about 7, finally, after such a hard journey. My mom managed to find a special school in the capital of the county, so we had to move from the small city to the big city in order to let him to go to a special school. And the special school was called ABCR, and even today he pronounces these four letters. He remembers very vividly his years in that special school. And there, I think that was my first experience of something similar, probably, to what we today expect from inclusive education. Because even being in a special school, I was included in this school. It was not him included in a mainstream school, but I was included in his school. So whenever my mom wanted me to skip my own school and attend his school, I could. They would just welcome any sibling to come along. And every time they had trips outside the school, train trips, going to the beach, picnics, whatever, they would welcome the siblings. They very much encouraged the families to bring the other children together. So I learned loads with that. I had loads of friends that had learning difficulties. Some had just physical difficulties or disabilities. And I think that was the beginning of my questioning. Why these children are here? Why they are hidden? Why they are not? Why the other children that play with me don't know this? And that school was such a nice place. I loved that school more than anything. It was my favorite place in the whole world. It was the special school. And one of my favorite games was wheelchair racing. It was not allowed. And I was caught sometimes and was told off several times, but I loved to play that. And there was a particular, my friend drew this, and I didn't tell him that it was a boy that played with me usually, not a girl, and he drew a girl. But there was a particular boy that he couldn't move anything, just his face, and he loved playing that with me. And there was a carer that was our accomplice, that he was the person that would push him while I was trying to do the other bit. And it was such a nice time. I can remember those occasions being such a good moment. And that man that I also remember him very clearly, very dark skin and very tall and skinny, and was our accomplice during that, where the social workers and physiotherapists, no one could see that we were playing that long corridor wheelchair racing. And so, but on the other hand, I also had my friends that were from my street, that were from my school, and was interesting because my brother was the only person with learning difficulties that any of them knew. So I think he was the only visible one. The other ones were all family secrets, as Deborah talked the other day, yesterday. And he was the only one that was not a secret. Because I chose to go to the streets bringing him. We played in our street outside our house. And that became my golden rule. If you cannot be friends with my brother, you cannot be friends with me. So that was very clear. That was a decision that I took very early in my life. And I became a selective person based on that. So if you think that he doesn't smell well, I don't care about you. I care about my brother. So I was sometimes, I had to be very strong and hard and tough with people that wouldn't refuse play with him. So I would just bring him home, and I wouldn't play as well. So we had a group of friends that came very attached to him as well. And like Mabel, I think they are also my family. They are just friends, but they became my family as well. And I have to say, they are more my family, some of these friends, even today, than my own siblings that never accepted my brother as much. they accept him as a kind of misfortune in our family that we have to accept. While these friends, they enjoyed being with him. They played with him. They had fun with him. They laughed at him. We made jokes with him. And he made jokes with us. I remember one day that one of my best friends, which is pictured in this pink thing, she changed her haircut. And when she came along, he couldn't stop laughing. And he was pointing at her hair and laughing. And at the end, everyone was laughing because her hair really came funny. And he was the only one that would just don't pretend that it was nice. And and even today, she remembers that. And she said, every time that I go to a hairdresser, I remember your brother. I have to make sure that nothing comes funny. Because she still remembers him laughing at her, sitting on the floor, just laughing. And he would do these sort of things, and he could do, sometimes being even a bit not the most kind person in the world. And they would deal with that. And they dealt with him as just another child that had some differences, some difficulties. And one big difficulty that he posed to us, to me in the beginning, and then to us as a group, was the fact that sometimes we were playing outside and there was a time that we have to go home. Every single child had that same time. The moms would say, by this time, by 8, everyone at home. And he would sit on the floor and say, I'm not going. And I started carrying him. And he was heavy and was not easy at all. And I have to say that, again, I think that's what Deborah talked yesterday moved me, because I think that there was an element of shame on doing that as well. Because I could see sometimes the grown-ups looking at me carrying that big boy that could walk but didn't want to walk. And he, in his ways, for those days, he was so different because all the other children, they were normal. And why he was different? And when I knew, for example, that my mom had a cousin that had a child the same age as my brother, and I've never met this person until today. They kept him in a separate room in the house. They built a room in the back of the house, kind of a detached, self-contained place for him, and they kept the boy hidden from the world. And I guess that he was not the only one. He was the one that was from my family, so I could know. But I'm sure there was loads somewhere. So I found that sometimes was amusing, my brother being the only different person, because I found people were sometimes strange. Why they don't understand him? Why they've reacted to him that way? Because for me it was so easy to understand why he was. And as a child, I sometimes redirected people that couldn't understand him, because for me it was so easy, so obvious. And of course for them it wasn't, because how they could learn about difference when these people were kept hidden, secret. Later in life, my friends and I, we were teenagers and we had other interests. And for him, for my brother, was different, because he couldn't cope the same way that he could when he was younger, and he could play ball and play things with us. And when we were teenagers, he was more someone that used to observe us and look at us, listen to our conversation, and sometimes say something, sometimes laugh at something, and do his interventions in the way that he could. But of course, the difference became more evident, because we developed in a certain rhythm and he was developing a different rhythm, most of us. And in this time was when one of my best friends started being my helper. When he didn't want to go home, he was too big for me to carry. He was even bigger than me already. And then I had this friend that would help me to carry him home, which was for him one of the funniest things in life was being carried home, laughing, and the whole street would hear his laugh going home because he loved that. He thought it was good doing that to us. And then I started being, I think from the very beginning, I always been this, someone that was always talking about my brother. So I was in my school, and if anything that I had to do, that I had to choose a theme, I would choose my brother as a theme. So if I had to do pictures, if I had to write a poem, if I had to do whatever I was doing at school, I was presenting my brother to people that didn't know him. And lots of people came to be curious about him. Some people happened even to meet him later, saying, "I want to meet your brother. I want to know him. I want, because he is so funny, and you tell so many stories about him." So I've been through my life making him visible as much as I could, because the society, the place where we're living, didn't allow him to be visible. He was to be another invisible one. But with the help of my mother, because of course she allowed me to do so, she agreed me to bring him to the streets and play with the other children, taking risks that probably some other mothers wouldn't take, would say, "No, he is weak, or he is this, or he is that, or people will laugh at him, or will bully him, or whatever." But she kind of trusted that I would look after him. And later she started trusting also my friends that you'd come to my house. She knew everyone, so they were really kind of family, a second family for me. So with all these experiences that I'm telling you, just really a small portion of it, I think that today I realize that one huge thing that I've seen here yesterday and today is that one thing that I always claimed was that he was underestimated by my whole family, by even my mom, and that he was not more independent because people didn't trust that he could do things. And being here today and seeing so many people, so different people with so many different abilities, I think that I was right and they were all wrong. That if he had opportunity, he probably had learned a lot, because he is extremely clever. He is extremely sensitive in different ways. He understands me better than anyone in the world, and I understand him better than anyone in the world. We just look at each other and we know. And he still doesn't speak much. His speech is hard to be understood. And sometimes I phone Brazil and he just sings a song to me on the phone. And he learns a new song and he just sings to me on the phone. And my mom sometimes is in the background, stop this, it's expensive, the phone call is expensive and you're just singing. And he just wants to sing a song for me. And that's his way to say, "I feel sad, I'm just singing for you." Because that's what he did all his life. He showed me up when I needed. Yeah, so... And that's he is, that's me and him. When in this first picture, he couldn't walk yet. He was nearly 4, and he walked maybe months after that, because I remember even this room was the same room where we played with the ball, the soft ball. And this picture in the middle, well, he loves taking pictures, being in pictures. So he was kind of making a book for... Look, lots of different poses, and the other one was his last birthday last year. So what I have to say is that one of maybe not the main reason that I am someone involved in researching inclusive education is because I think that human nature, we are totally diverse. We are totally different. Each of us is different. And there is no reason why we need to be separated in a school or in by class, by whatever it is. We shouldn't be separated in categories. I think the being a human being, it's so specific and so different that you cannot categorize anyone. Everyone is different. And I've learned at first hand that being together with difference, and I had the other siblings, that they had no learning difficulties, and they had some of them very skilled and very in other areas, I've learned that I benefited much more from my relationship with José rather than with some of my other siblings. And why should we be prevented of this enrichment, like we have been in these 2 days here? It's not just about bringing the people that have been put away and giving them opportunity to be together with the other ones, but as giving these ones that have been kept not knowing about who we are, and say, look, this is who we are. This is how human beings are. This is, we are all part of the same thing. So my brother is still with me, and this is why I am in the last one I was saying that I am still carrying him, because unfortunately we are geographically separated. Life sometimes does this sort of thing. But he is still with me wherever I go, and I'm sure that I am with him wherever he goes as well, because we have really a strong relationship. And I wouldn't be the person that I am if I didn't have him. And one thing was very common on those days, people saying, don't you wish that your brother was not this way? And for me, it was very early, I had a conviction. I never wished that he wasn't different, that he was. Never. I never wished that. And I am very happy that he was. He was born exactly as he was. I only regret that he didn't have the opportunity that he was entitled to. And he was denied, especially voice. Okay. Thank you very much.
Mabel's coming back. Right. That was well done. Well done. Yes. You look after your brother. Yes.
I did.
Well done. Right.
We're all different.
Has anybody got questions? But don't speak until the microphone comes round to you. So if you've got questions, please put your hand up. Okay.
One there already.
It's not a question as such, it's just a comment. I think so many, you know, being here sort of today, just the short period I am, I think so many people are people doing as opposed to, you know, human doings, or humans doing as opposed to humans being. And I think, you know, the term you refer quite a lot to, you know, about human beings. And I think that's really right. You know, your brother, he's being a human being. He's being who he is. And that's all he ever needs to be. As opposed to being a human doing, which is doing what other people think they should be.
But, hold on there just a minute. You see, years ago, it was a disgrace to have somebody. It doesn't matter how bad they are, or how good they are. Years ago, it was a disgrace to have somebody with a learning disability, and it wasn't called learning disability at that time. So, you know, and it was a disgrace to have somebody, because they thought it, you know, it was a disgrace for the family, or it was something, you know, the family had done that happened. But years ago, it was a disgrace, because they used to say, right, they're better locked away than they are out in the community. And that used to happen. So, you know, I can understand people through that, because it used to be a disgrace at that time. All right, put your hand up. Wait a minute, wait for the microphone, please.
Don't worry, Mabel.
How old is your brother?
He's 39 now.
Yeah. He it doesn't matter how old they are and where they come from. We're all different and we all have to be human beings and live in the world like everybody else. Mm-hmm. Okay?
Any more?
Yeah.
And then over to Jan, please.
I was just wondering, you sort of gave a glimpse of a spirit of inclusive education. Maybe it's not one that's repeatable as a model. People without learning difficulties or siblings being welcomed into special schools. But is there any sort of lesson you could, you know, take from that into education that would foster a spirit of inclusive education?
I think that the what's been done so far to promote inclusive education is very much what I experienced as a child, even being the other way around. Because in that school, I belonged. Somehow I belonged. Because it didn't matter what was the activities they were doing. I could just join in. And I was never highlighted as the visitor or someone that... And I was not enrolled in that school at all. So I just felt welcome there. So I think that this is the essence of inclusive education, I think, is making everyone belong. So everyone needs to belong there and be together as part of the same thing, whatever we're doing, swimming, playing, writing, reading. And everyone does in his own way or her own way of doing. So I remember that I couldn't swim. I can't swim until today. It's a shame. But and I went to the swimming pool several times with the other children. And because I couldn't swim, I was with the ones that had difficulties with water. So it was just a way of putting me in the safer position rather than the other ones that were able to swim. So, but there was no... I didn't feel at all humiliated or anything. I was just with the other ones. While in other activities, they put me in a different way accordingly with what was being done. So I think that... This is the lesson: is don't make a big fuss of what is different. Just we are different, okay? So we do this and we do that.
Can Jan be the last one because we've got another speaker? So Jan, I'm sorry to you know, but I like to keep to time. So Jan's the last one, please.
Thank you. I feel very honoured. And thank you for a wonderful presentation. I thought it was absolutely fantastic. And I was thinking, like you, about what do we understand by this word inclusion, and should we be thinking differently about what inclusion is? Not necessarily saying come into my world, but you know, whose world are we welcoming people into? Now I thought for me that was a great thing about what you said, and also the what you lent life to. It's a lot of the things we have around are just words. We have words like inclusion or support circles or whatever. And I thought what your talk did was actually give life to some of those rather empty words that get bandied around, that you created through your very courageous stand for your brother, saying you'd only be friends with me if you're friends with my brother, a support circle for him. But it came to life in the way you spoke about it. So thank you very much. It's not really a question, but more an appreciation of your paper.
Thank you very much. And I appreciate that.
Can we say thank you to you?